My name is Dr. Maria Music. I'm an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Michigan. And as a clinician, direct the perinatal parent-infant clinic within the Women's Mental Health and Infants Program in the Department of Psychiatry. I'm also an assistant research scientist at the Center for Human Growth and Development, which is a collaborative research unit within the University of Michigan. So today, I will discuss with you the impact of perinatal illness on parenting, as well as the development of the fetus and the young child. And my focus will be particularly on perinatal depression. Perinatal depression is common, with prevalence rates ranging between 6 and 15%, depending on the tools we use to diagnose the condition. In general, 1 in 5 women in the United States experience episode of major depression during her lifetime, and often this illness starts between the ages of 20 and 40, which is a prime age for childbearing. While approximately 10% of pregnant or postpartum women are clinically depressed, even more women experience subsyndromal depression, which is frequently overlooked and therefore untreated. In fact, most affected women with perinatal depression do not receive treatment. And one study done here in Michigan by my colleagues found that women who have perinatal depression and are screened positively in obstetric clinics do not present for care. Why is that? There are many reasons, from lack of access to treatment to reluctance to engage in such due to stigma or the fear of negative consequences to the fetus when taking medicines. With ongoing research in this area, we are gaining more information on the safety of medicines during this time period, but also about the effectiveness of other treatment modalities such as counseling, peer support, psychotherapies, or complementary and alternative treatments like omega-3 fatty acids, mindfulness, or light therapy. Overall, attention to perinatal depression is important, as untreated illness can have negative effects on the course of pregnancy and on the developing baby. Depressed women are more likely to participate in unhealthy practices during pregnancy, such as smoking, even the intake of illicit substances. Depressed women also may have higher rates of poor nutrition, in part because they lack appetite, which leads them to poor weight gain and risk for intrauterine growth retardation. Depressed women may also be less compliant with prenatal care and feel less invested in the care towards the pregnancy. Women who have depression report increased pain and discomfort during their pregnancies. They report more somatic symptoms such as nausea, stomach pain, shortness of breath, GI symptoms, heart pounding or dizziness compared to non-depressed women. And consequently, all these symptoms may increase the mother's likelihood for poor antenatal weight gain, which then contributes to her risk for preterm delivery and for low birth weights of the neonate. Depression in pregnancy also bears greater likelihood for obstetrical complications like preeclampsia and increased surgical delivery, causing extended hospital admissions after delivery, as well as the newborns being born with lower APGAR scores and having more admissions to neonatal intensive care units. Depression is associated with various neurobiological disturbances in the maternal biology that can directly or indirectly affect physiological mechanisms of pregnancy and fetal development. Research done by colleagues in the United Kingdom suggests that maternal depression leads to alterations in the mother's blood flow in the uterine artery, which supports the uterus and the fetus with necessary oxygen. Maternal depression or severe anxiety in pregnancy reduces the blood flow via constriction of the vessels. And this has been correlated with premature delivery, low birth weight, and preeclampsia. Maternal depression also alters her own and the baby's hypothalamic pituitary adrenal stress axis, which is the body's mechanism to react to internal and environmental stress. The end product of this stress axis is the stress hormone cortisol, which has many important downstream effects crucial for survival during acute stress, but needs to be also tightly controlled and its level kept low after stress recovery. Chronically elevated cortisol levels in the mother exposes the developing fetus to this stress hormone and has negative consequences. Elevated maternal cortisol is responsible for premature delivery and fetal growth restriction. Babies of mothers who suffer from depression have changes in their cortisol stress response functioning themselves, most likely hardwired already in utero, which we call fetal programming. And these babies show a more difficult postpartum adaptation. These infants cry more often and are more difficult to be consoled than babies born to non-depressed mothers. These babies have disturbed sleep, and the effect is evident as early as 2 weeks postpartum and might persist for months. Babies born to depressed mothers are fuzzier, vocalize their needs less, and make fewer positive facial expressions than babies of non-depressed mothers. If the mother's depression continues into the postpartum period, she faces an even greater challenge, potentially having to care for a temperamentally difficult baby. Research suggests that depressed mothers are less able to regulate their own affect when interacting with the infant compared to healthy mothers. And therefore, these moms might be less sensitive or responsive to their infant's emotional cues, particularly in the times when the baby is distressed. In a meta-analysis of 46 observational studies looking at maternal interactive behaviors towards the baby in depressed and non-depressed mothers, maternal postpartum depression was associated with increased rates of less optimal parenting behaviors, such as being either more intrusive or being more disengaged with the baby. What does more intrusive look like? That might be something like roughly pulling or poking at the baby, handling or speaking in an angry manner, or not following the baby's cues and being more controlling. Disengaged parenting might look like ignoring the baby or being less responsive when the baby calls, or showing fewer vocalizations in interaction with the baby. All of this is, of course, even heightened when the other parenting partner, for example, the father, is depressed as well, which we know from research occurs in 10 to 30% of families where the mother is depressed. Over time, babies develop, based on these daily lived experiences and memories of many distress-soothing cycles with their parents during this first year of life, a distinct attachment pattern to their parent. If the parent is predictably sensitive and emotionally available during these times of distress, when the infant attachment needs are activated and the baby is distressed and signaling for soothing, then this baby develops a secure attachment. Secure infants, when they are stressed, signal their distress to the parent and can be comforted. And in turn, the parents of secure infants are emotionally available, perceptive, and responsive to their baby. By contrast, insecurely attached babies are either unable to openly show their distress, or they might display heightened mixed emotions towards the parent and cannot be soothed. Parents of insecure infants tend to be emotionally more unavailable, aloof, or sometimes rejecting, and emotionally unpredictable or insensitive. Studies suggest that parents with depression have significantly more likely infants with insecure attachments. In turn, such insecure attachments have been shown in many longitudinal studies to be a potential risk factor for worse developmental child outcomes. Children with insecure attachments to their caregivers are more likely to have problematic peer relationships in school or more problem behaviors such as anxiety or aggression later on. Today, we have accumulating evidence that treating postpartum depression alone may not be sufficient to protect children against the long-term poor outcomes. Some research suggests that the therapy that only targets improvements of the mother's mood postpartum does not necessarily improve her parenting sensitivity or child outcomes. Therefore, relationship-based treatments such as mother-infant psychotherapy or guidance are favored as additional modalities to support disrupted parent or mother-infant bonds and less optimal interactions. Such therapies may be short-term or long-term and may be rooted in psychodynamic or attachment theory. Other techniques that might be used are mindfulness or yoga for the parent to help regain emotional balance, and techniques such as baby massage to support the connection with the baby. All are beneficial to enhance the parent-infant bond.